Welcome to the Gig Work Podcast, a podcast brought to you by the Wage Indicator Foundation, where we highlight developments, best practices, events, research and more on global issues in the gig economy. My name is Martin Aretz and I am your host today. Access to financial services is an issue for many self-employed workers and gig workers. In this episode, I talk to the founder of a startup that has found a solution to this. Rolly makes it easier for self-employed and platform workers to access financing. Until now, it has been difficult to obtain a loan without a steady monthly income. Lenders want a clear picture of income in order to calculate a credit score. Rolly unlocks data from platforms, banks, tax portals and other relevant data sources for lenders. This should lead to fair access to financial services for all workers. For this episode of the Gig Work Podcast by the Wage Indicator Foundation, I traveled to Paris to talk to Ali Hamriti, founder of Rolly. Enjoy listening.
So I'm Ali Hamriti. I'm the co-founder and CEO of Rolly. In a nutshell, Rolly is an open finance platform that facilitates alternative data access for financial institutions, the economy workers, freelancers, and now traditional employees, so basically any type of worker. So we try to make the financial system more inclusive for people who have fragmented revenues or people who have decided to embrace a different life by leveraging alternative data, which is basically income data, tax data, activity data, so everything that can help to include the maximum of people inside the financial system. So personally, I'm a Moroccan and French entrepreneur. I grew up in Morocco, in Casablanca. I came to France in 2009. I studied in France data science. I have a data science background. I worked a bit in Paris and Dubai, a bit in London, and then came back to Paris to launch Rolly. Yeah.
Okay. And so where does the idea came from?
The idea came from my last experience. I was a head of data in a fintech in Paris that wanted to make more accessible loans to freelancers. So part of freelancers, we know the gig economy platform workers, but also digital freelancers like designers or developers. And to keep it short and simple, we struggled a lot to underwrite them based on banking data because it was quite complicated to evaluate their professional situation. Obviously, in bank data, we can see some payments, we can see some income coming, but we don't have the context about the income. So understanding what is the dynamic of a freelancer, understanding if we can predict the income of freelancers in the right way was quite challenging at this time. And we figured out that there are a lot of other data points that we can gather from alternative platforms like freelance platforms, for instance, or tax portals. And that led to Rolly. I spent a lot of time with a childhood friend, Camille, who helped me to understand what is the right approach on it. And when I figure out that launching a platform, starting with gig economy workers and then expanding to all type of workers to make this data accessible for financial services was the real gap in the market.
And what was the reason that the first step was with gig workers?
First of all, there is two reasons behind that. There is one quite pragmatic, which is to onboard the customer in financial services, so to onboard a bank, a neobank or a lender. They want you to cover the majority of the users. So we wanted to start with a niche that has a lot of demand, a lot of appetite for those financial services. I experienced that during my time just before Rolly in the fintech I used to work for. And the second reason is it's a growing pain. It's something that is a pain in European countries, in the US, but also in emerging countries. We need to include all of the people that have decided or not to diversify their income, to generate income in new ways. And the credit scoring system is not adapted to that kind of profiles. So we understood that the type of data that we can help to analyze is much needed for gig economy workers. So the data coming from gig platforms or other alternative data points has to be analyzed in the credit scoring approach. So combining those two things led us to understand that there is something to do in that area, and that there is also an impact that we can have in the financial system.
And we also see that this category of workers formerly didn't have any initial data points because they are working maybe first in informal markets and they were not visible, and by that also not usable for credit companies.
You have this point a lot in emerging markets. A lot of people starting to work in the informal market. And thanks to platforms like Uber, Upwork, they have started to generate income in a more digital way. And we can use their, they can actually share their data with third party to understand better their professional behavior. So that's like a trend that we observed a lot in emerging markets in Africa or India, for instance. In Europe, it's a bit different. It's people who have decided to embrace the freelance life. Sometimes they used to have a full-time job, for instance, and they figure out that they can make either like the same amount of money or more money by starting to become a freelancer, but to get more freedom on top of that. And because they switched from something that is quite stable for banks, which is like in France, we are in Paris right now. There is the CDE, which is the full-time employment type of work, and it has been considered as the best. Like the less riskiest people in France, but actually it's not, because a lot of industries are suffering. So a lot of people have decided to quit this CDE to start to be freelancer, and then they directly have been excluded from the financial system. They have to wait 3 years before getting a loan because the bank or the lender need 3 balance sheets, and because of those things that are quite real. They needed not a tool, but a kind of partner to help the banks understanding better their financial situation. And as a fully embedded product into banks' journey, into lenders' journey, we can facilitate during the credit application this analysis. So it's quite transparent and it's hidden for the end user. So that's, yeah.
And what are the different industries where you're operating in? You already mentioned lending.
Yeah, we're quite focused on lending. There are a lot of applications for income and employment verification or analyzing financial data or alternative data. We are building the broadest coverage on alternative platforms. So I can mention a few. I mentioned gig platforms, obviously, because we started with this. But we have expanded to tax portals to facilitate the income and employment verification of 100% of workers. And it's still super useful for freelancers and gig workers because we have a broader history. We can show that having a stable job doesn't mean to be not at risk. So a freelancer that has several jobs can show some stability by having regular income over time or regular taxes paid. So that's something that we can show. And we've expanded also to payments wallet, to utilities, because we've got the demand coming from our customers to expand to that kind of platforms. And so the industry where we are quite focused on is the lending, and especially the credit underwriting process, because this is where we've seen the most appetite, actually. We have every week discussions with credit risk underwriters ahead of lending, and they, especially right now, with the competition growing from neobanks, which are getting their banking license, which are starting their lending journey. So even the incumbents know that they have to propose a similar experience to their users when it comes to lending. In a few months, we can get a mortgage fully online with some neobank, for instance. And all of those factors are leading to a more digital approach for lending coming from those institutions. And this is our promise. We promise to help them to understand for each type of worker what is the best data set to analyze. Everything is consumer permissioned. So everyone owns their own data. Owns their data, actually. Everyone needs to understand who's checking the data and for which reason. And we want to make what happened for open banking and for the regulation around open banking something more global for your income data, your tax data, your payslip, your invoices, for everything. We need to be able to share our data with third party by having something really simple to do it. And this is where we unlock actually this system.
And you already shared a bit of the founder story, where you also came in with the inspiration for Worli. And what way, so how did you validate this also if others were also in need of this? And we want to focus on the clients and the workers. So how did you validate if your ID also was echoing with the needs of the clients, so the credit companies and the workers?
Regarding the validation of the idea, it happened, let's say, for the first niche that we addressed. So we approached the problem by covering each category of workers step by step. So as I shared, we have decided to focus on the gig economy, and we understood that there is a financial ecosystem around the gig economy, from auto lenders, cash advance company, insurance, which need this data to run their processes, to run their verifications. And just before launching Rolly, they were either analyzing a lot of documents, asking users to upload a lot of documents, doing a lot of manual reviews, or trying to build something internally that is similar to what we plan to do. And by speaking with them, we just understood that there is a need. There is a market for it. So like the market globally is super interesting. Locally, it's a really great market to start as an early stage company. And by focusing on building, because everything that we are building is definitely not easy to replicate. So we just understood all of the edge cases and all of the specificities of our infrastructure. Step by step, we started to grow our usage with some partners, especially in the UK and France at the beginning. And we understood that, that model of infrastructure, where it takes time at the beginning to build your coverage, it takes time to onboard the customer, especially if the customer is big. But once you're fully embedded, then it's growing super fast. So there's like more exponential growth than something linear when it comes to infrastructure. So let's say the shift came when we have decided to cover everyone. So we understood, and also like to say, the gig economy market suffered a lot 2 years ago. I mean, it was obviously booming during the pandemic, and then you can see a lot of platforms that have either shut down or there is like more consolidation in the market. So for us, we understood that we are still believer in the future of the gig economy, but we like more regulation and more rights for everyone. But there is a strong market to develop, especially building a different approach than traditional credit bureaus when it comes to underwrite and to give a score to freelancers. I firmly believe that we can't apply the same rules for gig workers, freelancers, or traditional employees. We need to include much more data points in gig workers' credit report. And that's something that we have in mind that we want to develop in the future. But as a company that wants to grow and that wants to gain more market shares and to onboard also the leading fintech, we have expanded our coverage to for instance, tax portals, where we cover 100% of workers today in 8 countries in the world. So 6 countries in Europe and 2 countries in emerging markets. And with that coverage, we can onboard traditional banks. We can onboard leading fintech neobanks because their solution is made for everyone. They want to onboard any type of worker. So they need to verify some specific data points that we can find in other data sources than banking data, actually. After this, so obviously we had several points to validate, especially the conversion rate, for instance, if people would be willing to connect their accounts. And we were like pretty surprised that yes, they were like more willing to connect their accounts than their bank accounts, for the simple reason that in your bank account you are sharing a lot of your life, while for your payroll account, for instance, you are sharing something that you're quite proud of, which is your work, your income, your employment. And that's something that is just super common. It has always been common to share your proof of income coming from your job, your work, then connecting all of your bank accounts. So which I'm a defender of open banking. I think that banking data is like the first step of the acceleration of a world where we own our personal data and we can do whatever we want with it. And this is where it came, the second validation. The second validation is banks, lenders wants more data points than only bank data. They are keen to integrate other open finance platforms because they figure out that for each financial product, for each category of workers, we need the specific integrations to leverage and not one set of integrations that suits everyone.
Yeah, yeah, sounds logical. And I think also maybe one of the reasons why the gig economy was a really good starting point is I think first that's normal freelancer. I'm also a freelancer, but I maybe have 10 clients a year, so it's quite the information asymmetry is quite low. Well, with a gig, especially when you look at the delivery and taxi, but also data work, then people have hundreds of thousands of different clients per year. Depends on, of course, because when you talk to unions, they say no, they have one client, which is the platform. That's another discussion. And also, their control of access to work is also quite limited because they're dependent on the platform if they get work, yes or no. Which you also saw, of course, when COVID started quite some years ago. So I think that was also maybe a good reason to first start. And also, yeah, platforms, they are digital first. So can you tell me about, maybe now we can dive a bit deeper into the different stakeholders. So I think so, the clients, the bank, then the workers, and then the platforms. So what are the challenges to onboard a new client, because there's a reason why they're so really innovative in digital, because there's quite some internal processes which are blocking some innovation. What are your main challenges and how do you deal with that?
Sure. So the first challenge, first of all, is the first conversation we have with banks is, what is your coverage? So they always ask, what is your coverage? So now we are super comfortable to say that our coverage is great. And before, we can put on the discussions for months, because we had to add several integrations to onboard some of them in our initial markets, not speaking about expansion, but let's say initial markets. And after this conversation, we always ask, what is your current way to do it? The current way to do it hasn't changed a lot, except with the integration of open banking for a lot of banks and new banks, which is quite common right now. I mean, the adoption is clear. So for those who haven't integrated open banking yet, actually the discussion will be a bit tougher, because open banking is part of their roadmap. So they are like the last companies adopting this. But what we try to do is, you're going to change your flow, because actually you are seeing your metrics. You know that your conversion rate is quite low when you ask your customers to upload some documents. You understand also that there is more and more fraud documents, and you are increasing your budget in your fraud departments to help identifying all of the new fraud events that are coming. So you have several pain points from conversion, from increasing your revenues, increasing your acceptance rates, to identifying fraud events or analyzing better the solvency of people. So all of those things can be solved by having access to the right data. Our thing with this, we try to understand how we can make them a really quick test. And as you said, we are API native. I mean, Roll is an API initially, but we figure out also that we have to propose some no-code solutions to be able to onboard everyone, because some type of customers, especially the biggest ones, even if they have talented developer inside to test, I mean, it's just a question of timing. I mean, before starting a proof of concept or starting to test the solution, you can wait like months for this. So for us, we just find the best way is to propose them a simple way to even connect their own accounts to see how the data looks like, to give us some feedback. And then we can move forward really faster. For companies that have integrated open banking, it's even faster, because they have identified the strengths and the shortages of open banking. And we come with directly the pros of using Rolli versus to complement open banking, because the reality is that open banking is enough for a lot of financial products like buy now pay later. But when it comes to a high consumer credit, when it comes to a mortgage, when it comes to a car loan, even the regulation asks you to verify some tax receipts or some proof of employment. So and for some of them, you don't necessarily need to check the bank account. So either we complement open banking in some use cases, either we are standalone for some financial products, and we just share with them all of this. And because they already have integrated other APIs like open banking or KYB solution, it's quite easy for them to quickly look at the API, to give us some feedback, to make the tests, and we move faster. So depending on the adoption of external APIs in the credit application, we see different timing in terms of adoption coming from lenders. Yeah.
And the kind of data that you can deliver. So you say, okay, also alternative data. So are these all the data points where they're not used to bring in their calculations?
Yeah. So in terms of data, so if we go deeper into alternative data and what I call alternative data, so you can see it as alternative to banking data, first of all, or any other type of personal data that can help to prove positively your risk profile. I mean, to prove that you have a positive risk profile. We started with payroll data. So payroll is an alternative data point. Mm-hmm. So payroll, it's your payslips, it's your proof of income, your proof of employment. It's payroll data. Tax data include your tax receipts, so we can see how much money you made over the past 2-3 years. It's an alternative data point. So utility data. Your utilities can help a lot to prove even your address, for instance, and to prove that there is like no risk of fraud when it comes to analyzing your application. Or even in emerging markets, you can underwrite a lot of people thanks to utilities because they are working in the informal space. They don't have any bank data or even tax data, but they are paying their bills on time. So if they are paying their bills on time, if they prove that they go from point A to point B every day, you figure out that it's someone who has a regular activity and someone serious because their bills is paid on time. And all of those type of data sets are part of alternative data. And we imagine the future of credit underwriting, the future of the credit information has to be led by this approach to leverage each type of alternative data for a specific reason. Well, if we take France, for example, you know that in France, there is no credit bureaus, right? So it's quite particular. But so the credit bureaus are the banks. Banks have the data of their consumers. But there is like an opacity about a credit scoring rule. So even like in the UK or the US, you have access to your credit score from TransUnion, Equifax, or Experian, for instance. And you can, over time, understand how each credit bureau is underwriting you because you are sharing some events and you can correlate those events with an increase or a decrease of your credit score. So let's say like if you're super serious and you check that every month, let's say, after a few years, you can understand their different approach. In other geographies, it's when there is no credit bureau or just the emergence of credit bureau, there is an opacity about how people are perceived from the financial system. And now we just want to, we imagine alternative data in our platform as the link between all type of workers, all type of risk profiles, and how the financial institutions should evaluate them based on the right data set.
And do you only provide data, or do you also do analysis of this data?
We are the facilitator between the end user and our customers. So the end user is a worker or a company. So we facilitate data sharing access, and we provide insights. We provide insights to our customers so they can look at our insights to understand how to evaluate all of the risks. So we don't provide a score yet, actually, and we imagine as being the co-pilot of risk underwriters because our main value proposition right now is to unlock all of those data that are so valuable for risk underwriters to increase their acceptance rate. So we want to evaluate over time how people who were able to share their data thanks to Rolly have increased their chances to get a score. So that's are what we propose, and the flow of Rolly to go back to the flow, it's fully embedded into the onboarding or the underwriting of our partners, which are banks or fintech. We recently launched an income report, which is the right for everyone to apply their data portability, basically, and to be able to look in a simple report how their data looks like. So we started with the gig economy, so we allowed some in some markets gig economy workers to download their data. Actually, we were partnering with an application called Rodeo in the UK during years that has proposed an amazing income mapping feature for gig workers there. And because they switched off this feature, we wanted to still providing this to their user bases and to other gig workers because it was much needed, and we didn't want like just to stop this and to not propose any alternative solution. And that's something. It's something that we at this moment we do it for free, basically. I mean, it's like we don't monetize it or whatever, and we don't have like a plan for it, but just for us a good way to continue to prove our mission in the future, that what we can see in a report can be perceived in different ways coming from financial institutions. So maybe by providing a Rolly report, a lender would be more comfortable to lend to a gig worker compared to their credit bureau reports, for instance.
Yeah.
So that's the way that we see things in the future. Yeah.
And maybe this will also attract new clients because workers, they go to their lender and they show the early report and they think, hey, this is smart thinking.
Yeah, exactly. So, and I mean, that's we are definitely a B2B fintech infrastructure and we focus on that. And for this, for us, it was, first of all, like a quite cool project, a really good project, super collaborative. I mean, I was super impressed to see all of my teams from marketing, design, backend, frontend, everyone involved in this project. It was the first time where it was like super collaborative with everyone. And it led to really good output. It just, I shared that with you just before like starting this podcast, but we just then quickly figured out that how people are afraid sometimes about their sharing data, their data. And I'm completely aware of this. I'm completely aware of when you see a new tool, a new solution coming to the market that is asking you to connect basically some accounts or whatever, you can be scared. But the reason why you can be scared, I mean, that's my assumption, is all of the lack of transparency that is in that space of data sharing for quite a while, is all of the big companies coming to the market and retargeting some things without your consent or without a clear consent or a clear way to use your data or leverage your data. And there is a lot of education and a lot of work to do to make people more comfortable and more aware of this place. And the reason why we're going to continue to invest in this is just we want to just let anyone understand that by just simplicity, by just clicking on a button, they can request all of their data points from any platforms that they want. They can delete their data points from all of the third party that have used this. And we allow this directly through our website, for example, at Rolly. We are like part of the only ones doing this. And there is a strong work about helping people to understand how some new players, and we are not the only ones, but some new players want to make this world of data sharing more transparent, and it's part of the DNA actually.
Yeah. And maybe that now it's also a good time to move from clients to workers. So how can you also explain the process that the worker needs to go into when they are using your application, when they want to have a loan for client X or credit company X?
Yeah, sure. So right now, Rolly is white label to our customers, which are banks. So as a worker, for instance, if you make a credit to a company working with us, a bank working with us, you're going to start your credit application. And during the credit application, you're going to see that company X is using Rolly to analyze your data. Do you consent to share your data? And then if you consent, you're going to start logging into the platform of your choice. And after this, we are sharing your data with the third party. So you know who's checking your data. So the company, the lender, is checking your data to make a credit application, and Rolly is checking your data to standardize it, to making it available for your customer. We don't store any personal data. Actually, we don't store any personal data because we don't need it. The only thing that we store is just statistics on top of the data points that we collect. And why the statistics? Because thanks to the statistics and thanks to those insights, we can understand how to propose to our customer a better view of their user risks and how we can impact directly the acceptance rate. Because the thing is, there is like one example. I have one customer, the auto lender for gig workers, starting their activity, but they didn't have any clue about what is a good Uber driver or Bolt drivers in the UK. Okay, so they started to put some pretty tough credit scoring rules at the beginning. So super selective, let's say. After like a few weeks, I came back to them and I said, look, we understood, because we were like quite collaborative, we understood that you want like this minimum of activity, this minimum of income, but that's not the reality of the drivers right now. So you can just decrease like the bar, and there won't be like any significant impact in your default rate. And we can evaluate that after 4 months, because you're going to see that it's something that they are getting their pay every week. So it's rent to buy, like a business. And that's like our role as well. So this is where we understood that by having this approach as a data controller, so this is the statute as a data controller, we are allowed to build the statistics, and we use the statistics to making it to have like a direct impact on the acceptance rate of our customers.
And do you also do research on the impacts on the workers? So do they really get quicker access to lendings for clients that are using Rolee, or also maybe same client before and after using Rolee?
So right now, not. I mean, it's like data that our customers are sharing. So it's always quite complicated to evaluate because just before Rolee, either there was like another solution or there was no solution and everything was manual. So we try to understand the impact of how we can change the credit scoring rules. So basically, if we have lowered the bar of the acceptance rates, do we have an impact on the default rate? And then if the default rate is still stable, then we can prove that we help more people accessing a loan. And we helped also financial institutions to get more money because obviously lending is a business. So it's not a nonprofit. We'd love to work with nonprofit organizations in the future, but right now it's not the case. So by having those figures, we can help to help gig workers accessing better financial services in general. With the income report, we have a different view. I mean, we just understood that obviously a lot of fintech, a lot of banks, they want to get more customers. And the rates that we propose to freelancers in general are not the same rates that we propose to full-time employees. This is reality. I mean, even the credit score is computed in a different way or related to their situation. So the way that we see things is in the future, we can help, not right now, but we can help directly workers to get the best rates coming from our fintech partners, for instance. So they can see this company. I mean, we know like all of the best names, like all of the best fintechs, like Revolut, Monzo, etc. So basically, if they are part of our marketplace, they can propose some rates to our users who have decided to download their report, to check their report, and we can negotiate the best offers for them because we have a more realistic picture of their situation based on their activity, based on their job, and not based on general scoring rules.
Yeah. So, but that's the worker knows where to go for the best deal.
Yeah.
And about data. So you said, okay, so we don't store any personal data.
Yeah.
So, and you only facilitate the data transfer between the worker and the client, the credit company.
Yeah.
So there's also no other data being stored. So the workers, they don't get a Rolee wallet, an account, which they can use later, maybe a year after the transaction.
We don't have this product right now. It's not something that we exclude. It's just right now because we have to do things step by step, and it's important to be clearly identified as a solution that facilitates what we know, what we do, and what we want to continue to do, which is data sharing access. So the process is pretty simple. It's once you have connected your different accounts, it could be a payroll account, utility account, the data is transferred. So the third party that you have decided to share with have your data, and you can check their terms of use. They have your data, basically. But us as a data controller, once the transfer is made, we don't store your personal data. We're just going to store statistics on top of it. So a simple example of a statistic is not personal statistic. For instance, we don't know like if your gender, you don't know like your sex or whatever. We know basically your average income. Or you know, average income per country, because then we can understand, we can help customers to say, you have decided to exclude freelancers with less than £4,000 in this city. I'm sorry, but freelancers with £3,500 are super solvent in this city, and they are pretty good customers. So you can just decrease a bit of your bar. So that's the idea behind this. This is like why, as a data controller, it's important for us to understand those metrics, those insights, because it has a direct impact on our value proposition. And unlocking this alternative data for lenders, as I said, is much needed and we're growing at it. But our ambition is to have a direct impact on the acceptance rate of end users while keeping a low default rate and fraud rate. So to prove to the traditional financial institutions that have excluded a lot of type of workers during quite a while, that it was actually one of the biggest opportunities that they had to start addressing them.
Yeah, but they just had no idea how to calculate a decent credit score because they didn't have the process and the data.
Exactly. You have to start from somewhere.
Yeah, and also because the nice thing about by doing it via the direct link and the APIs is there's also zero opportunity for fraud. because the data is directly extracted. The only fraud that you could think about is that people are renting their accounts to others. That's the only thing.
Yeah.
But in general, yeah, especially when you look into the gig platforms, these are transactional platforms. So you know from the beginning to start that the work is being executed via the platform, and the data is directly linked from the platform to the credit company or the lending company. And then also maybe nice to go to the first stakeholder. So we had the client, we had the workers, and then go to the platforms. Because I think what is interesting in your approach, and as you know, I'm also quite busy with data sharing with my GigCV projects. And there I took the approach of making an API which platform themselves integrate. But with the strategy of already, so you build a link to the accounts of the worker on the platform. So in the end, you don't need to have any collaboration of the platform at all. Do they know that these kind of products exist? Because some platforms also offer their own financial lending, which is also a great quote unquote lock in for the platforms for people to work as much as hours as possible via their platform.
Yeah.
Are platforms also aware of these kind of activities? And did you also have conversations with them or with some of them, of course, on if they also see it maybe as an opportunity for their value proposition to the workers.
Yeah, for sure they know. I mean, for sure they know, and we were quite transparent since day one. I mean, I remember before having a product, I contacted a lot of leading platforms and saying that this is what I'm building, and I'm building this for this reason. And to be fair, I mean, we are not the only one, the first ones like doing it. I mean, credits first of all to Plaid in the US that has started to build this open banking platform and to allow people to share their banking data. And it was the beginning of this revolution of the open banking, open finance, and now open data. So I'm not coming to the market with a genuine idea to say, hey, by the way, your personal data, you own your personal data. I mean, it's something that has been done by so many people before, which is great. I think there is like one difference, and this is why so far, I mean, we're not experiencing something with platforms that are, let's say, quite complicated to live. I mean, it's the relationships are good so far. It's because open banking facilitates the scale of a lot of fintech that were competing with banks. So banks at the beginning, they've seen open banking as a threat, while what we are doing is to allow more and more people accessing better financial services because they struggle. I mean, there is a pain. A pain is to convince a traditional bank to provide an auto loan to a gig worker. This is why there is an ecosystem of partners of Uber, Bolt, and all of those platforms that are focusing on trying to get some loans, or like a fleet partners, for example, to get loans or to get cars for drivers, because this is a strong pain in the industry. There is a pain of helping gig workers access a mortgage, helping freelancers getting a good credit score, or a credit score that match their expectations. So everyone knows that the system is broken for this population, the financial system. And we are seen in the market as a facilitator. So obviously what we apply is the GDPR, the UK and EU GDPR, which means that the only thing that we need is to collect the consent of the end user. And by getting the consent, and if the consent is clear and transparent, that's super important. If the whole process is well defined for the end user, then we can have access to the end users once they log in to their platform. So we don't have any other way to do it without having the end user logging into their platform. So, and each time we collect the consent, we edit a certificate, basically. Mm. We know exactly which time someone has given their consent for which reason. So we can give a global context about all of the consents that we are collecting. So once we have this, we can collect any type of data. And as I said, like we are speaking about gig platforms, but we have more than 100 integrations today. And gig platforms and freelance platforms are a strong part of it. But as I said, we have tax portals, payments, wallets as well, utilities, and we continue to grow by adding 5 platforms every month. And we want to accelerate like even faster in the future. So that's, and as I said, that's something that in the future will be completely standard. All of those platforms have actually to open their API. They know it. To be fair, sometimes they don't have time to do it. Hmm. They have like plenty of projects. It's not a priority. And that's not a problem for us. I mean, we are not going to send like a letter or a recall of the GDPR or even of the EU regulation coming in 2 years that will push all of those platforms to open their API. That's not our battle. I mean, our battle is to convince more and more banks and fintech to start leveraging alternative data and covering all of the workers and not only a small part of it.
Yeah. And do you also have discussions with other stakeholders in the governments that are also making regulation also to put things more open? So what other stakeholders are also interesting for you and also for your story?
Stakeholders, part of governments, we're in discussion with some of them, mainly in France right now. France is a good example because I'm super impressed about how the government has accelerated their digital services, and especially on the identity part. You have a lot of different ways to prove your identity right now. The Netherlands as well, I think they're quite good for it. I checked the Netherlands tax portals and it's quite similar to France right now. Other countries, it's going to that direction. I think there is a huge project about digital identity in Europe and to make a digital identity passport as well in the next few years. So I see that. I mean, I've been challenged by especially investors saying that if all of those processes are in place, is it a trade to your business because it will be more easy for the end user? Actually, I'd love to make it more easy for the end user. I'm a citizen, so I won't. I mean, that's a problem that I'm solving also for myself. It should be super easy to just make a quick data portability, to quickly identify to a platform, sharing your data, knowing which kind of data points are leveraged by third parties. And it doesn't, with all of those different integrations to build, it will just create even more challenges for us because all of the financial institutions, they are not going to go one platform per platform, even if they have a public API to integrate it. I mean, they need a unified API. I mean, the problem is that we're going to have a lot of different type of data sets to integrate, a lot of different authentications flow to integrate. And the purpose of a unified API is to make it as quick, fast, secure, and reliable. Mm-hmm. And this is where the value proposition of a unified API is amazing. It's just, don't think about the four different flows that you have to integrate to allow your users to connect. We're going to do that for you. Mm-hmm. Don't think about like four and you multiply that by five, so like 20 different integrations of flow because you cover five countries. It's a lot of work, a lot of internal work for platforms to do that. So wasn't the initial topic, but to go back like to the discussions, I'd love to see more. There is this trend for digital services from governments that are getting like more easy to use from end users. And I imagine also, I mean, I love governments being more pushy about all of the other platforms. So including electricity, utilities, gas, payments, wallets, payroll. We should have a global regulation pushing for a single way, I mean, easy way to authenticate and to share our data. And we are, I mean, super keen to collaborate on it with government for sure.
Yeah. I've been in Estonia sometime for interviews with government people. And I think it's interesting to see how different countries have a different approach and vision on these topics. But I do agree in that I was also involved with some data wallets. And there was also, let's say, Netherlands, the institution that has all the official diplomas of people. They also now made an API by where now those diplomas are available also to link to an API. So I think it's also a matter of time. And of course, there are some countries that are faster and some countries that are not so fast. And if you look to expansion, one of the last questions, you're now, which you say, mainly focusing on France and UK. You also...
Europe is our market. And we work mainly with banks and lenders that are covering several countries in Europe. So we see EU and the UK as one market for us, yeah.
And what is take? Because I think we all know that there are quite some emerging markets that are really interesting for this. That's I think the whole global South, Asia, Latin America, and Africa. So what should it take to enter such a market, or is there already competition there, or so? So what are your considerations of, let's say, starting tomorrow in Kenya?
Yeah,
for example,
I'd love to. We onboarded 18 months, 2 years ago, some companies in Africa, especially Nigeria and Kenya. And we figure out quickly the potential of those markets, which is crazy. I mean, in Kenya, for people who never been there or don't know, but the mobile payments are much more widespread than in Europe. I mean, everyone has an M-Pesa account. Everyone is paying by mobile. So it just proved that some African countries are leading the way in digital payments. The way that we approach, I mean, we had a global go-to-market since day one. So we address the problem by understanding what type of integrations can help us to dominate the market in the long term. And we first of all try to assess what is the best coverage to get. Once we have the right coverage, we target the top 2-3 potential customers, the biggest ones. Even if they say cycle is long, we think that is the right bet, is to prove them that we want to work with them and to step by step going through, navigating through the sales cycle and to understand how we can partner. And we believe that by having those key players, we can grow much faster in the future. So even if, let's say, it takes 3 months, 5 months to start a POC with a big bank in Kenya, and then the implementation can last like three months, 4 months later, once you're fully implemented, and I'm optimistic, I mean, it can last more sometimes, the upside and the potential of growth is just incredible in the future, because you are, as an infrastructure, you are leveraging the user basis of your customer. So speaking about emerging markets, we speak with all of the companies that come to us directly. We have a lot of inbounds coming from Latin America or Africa or Asia. And then we try to just assess the opportunity, because we're like a team of 23 people, so we can't do like everything. But the reality is that we moved from a different ICP. So right now we focus on enterprise sales. We focus on players that have multiple geographical presence that can help us to grow faster in different countries. And we are experiencing the first effects of this shift. That's for us the best way to continue to expand. So if a customer in Latin America is aiming the South African market, for instance, onboarding them in Latin America or South Africa, for us, it's the same, as long as we know how to expand with them. If someone starts with us in Europe and then go to everywhere, actually, we want to go with them everywhere. So that's the type of customers that we are partnering with and that we want to continue to partner with.
Okay, great. And last question. So let's say I come back in 5 years here in Paris, or maybe wherever then your headquarters is.
Maybe somewhere else.
Amsterdam.
Yeah.
For tax reasons.
or just for feeling the vibe.
So where then do you want to stand in 5 years? So what is your dream?
I mean, now it's going to be, I mean, Rolly would be 4 years old, let's say, in 1 month. And I have enough step back to understand that building what we are building is a really long journey. It's a long-term project, for the simple reason that we are in an industry that hasn't been disrupted for quite a while. And a lot of companies try to disrupt it. And it's an industry that has, let's say, like the leaders of it in this industry have a pretty strong networks and pretty strong way to let's say navigate all of the phases of a new competition, let's say. And we are completely aware of that. Why I'm super optimistic right now is just all of the promises that we've seen in the market coming from neobanks, for instance, in 2016-17, where they weren't seen as a threat by traditional incumbents. You know, like at this time, I think Revolut and N26 or even Cash App, it was the app for the Gen Z or the travelers that wanted to not pay fees when they were traveling. Right now, all of them are still there, have incredible metrics, and are getting their banking license. They are followed by other fintech that haven't started with the same edge, but now they are expanding to lending. So I see like it's quite crazy right now, like from Marshmallow to Airwallex to Revolut. It's quite exciting to see all of the trends happening right now. And they are gaining more market shares with incumbents. And all of those companies, this is where our strongest asset is that they don't know how to work differently than in an efficient way, and that by integrating and fast some solutions. the projects are not lasting 2 years or 3 years of implementation. I mean, obviously, when they start to be big, it takes more time, but still. And for companies like us that are proposing this new value proposition in the market, for all of this ecosystem that is gaining more market shares from traditional profiles to new entrants, you know, like the thesis of banking the underbanked. We know that there are 2 billion people struggle to access a loan, and all of those people need to have a partner for it. So then I imagine like in 5 years, proving to the system, I'm not only Rolly, but all of the players like Rolly, proving to the system that it's a no-brainer question to be data-driven and to leverage other type of risk insights and risk models than the traditional ones. That does the system actually has changed, is going to continue to change, and especially incumbents that haven't integrated that will really struggle from my perspective in 5 years.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
I learned a lot from this conversation. Platforms and other digital nodes of data make it possible for data that was not digital before, such as revenue from informal markets or was too fragmented to collect, to be used now. Several cases have shown that centralizing can have negative effects. Look, for example, at discussions about digital surveillance and bad algorithms that make decisions based on this data. The beauty of Rolly's case study is that they use this data in the interest of the worker, and the initiative is always with the worker. By building an API dashboard where the workers themselves log in to their profiles to then share the data with Rolly, makes that Rolly doesn't need any collaboration with platforms. From my experience with GigCV, I know how challenging and hard it is to scale a model that is dependent on collaboration. Rolly achieves the critical mass for their market in cooperation with lenders. The individual worker is not the client, but the lender is. This is very smart thinking. In addition, the data is immediately usable. Banks already use this information to calculate risk, but the problem was that they simply did not have access to it. By tapping into data seen as valuable, they can quickly make real impacts. In the meantime, legislation is also increasingly ensuring that platforms and digital intermediaries need to focus more on sharing data. European regulations, like the Digital Markets Act, the DMA, and the European Platform Work Directive mean that data will no longer be shared only on requests, but will be available immediately and in real time. But even public institutions are following this trend. For example, with the European DAC7 legislation, European tax authorities must be ready to process income data from platform users. This all is good news for the future of initiatives like Rolly and GigCV, and therefore for self-employed and platform workers in general. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe to the Gig Work podcast, a podcast brought to you by the Wage Indicator Foundation. Also check our previous episodes of our podcast and our bi-weekly newsletter and online webinars on the global gig economy. You will find the links in the show notes.